Welcome to the Fearless Podcast. In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 5, and I am super pumped to have William on today from Perma Pasture Farms and the Perma Culture Pimpcast. And I just asked you, your dad is the permaculture pimp daddy, and you are
the pasture-raised pimp.
Pasture-raised pimp, where pimp stands for permaculture is my passion.
Yes, it is. So that way nobody gets too offended, but it's also the truth. I mean, permaculture is all of our passion, everybody in the family, to one extent or another.
That's great. And it almost makes me want to do a promo for Two Old Crows soap. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! No. You gotta love the branding.
There's a lot of people that need that soap.
That's right. So yeah, I'm real excited to have William on today. William and his wife live on the farm with their mom and dad. Well, his mom and dad.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to have him on is, you know, we've been homesteading now for about 8 years. And we've raised our kids here on our little farm. And, you know, we have a child rearing course, and then we have a young men's course. And the biggest question that we've been asked in our 6 or 7 years on social media is by a wide margin, the greatest question we get asked is, you know, how do you get your kids to buy in? How do you get them to participate? And what makes you think that they're going to stay on the farm? And we have lots of answers for that. And my oldest is 18, but that's why I wanted to bring William on, who is older. He's married, and he and his dad, his family, has figured out a way to fully monetize their homestead, and they are living off the land. And so I wanted to introduce y'all to William. I want to give William the opportunity to give us his like background story, like what led up to all this, and then why the farm and why are you still on the farm? Welcome, William, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today?
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. I'm on the Fearless Podcast. What's not to be excited about?
So tell us how you got to where you are today.
Well, it all started like back in 2008. There was a big wake up call for a lot of people. I was told, because I was little at the time, but I was told it was a big wake up call for a lot of people, and it was for my parents. And then also, like, my mom had always had like I guess some people would call her the almond mom, like always being healthy and stuff like that. She always had like an organic garden in the backyard. And then 2008 happened, and then dad got on board. Then he was like, all right, this food thing makes sense. And then we started with, just like checking out, Joel Salatin and also Jeff Lawton. And we started with chickens. Once dad saw the Jeff Lawton Greening the Desert, episode on YouTube, then he started realizing like, okay, permaculture is, It solves a lot of issues worldwide, because if it can be done in Jordan below sea level with the high alkalinity levels in the soil, I mean, it's right next to the Dead Sea, which you can float on top of because of the salt content, and then gets like 4 inches of rain per year, maybe, and it all happens at once, and he's able to grow food there. Well, that made, you know, dad and, you know, the rest of us all think, well, we can definitely do it here in Kansas. So that's where we started. And I was about... 2008, I would have been in middle school at the time, I think. I graduated 2013, so puts things into perspective. Man, I'm getting old now.
So you graduated in 2013. I graduated in 1994. So I'm a little bit older than you are.
That was the year before I was born.
So you graduated, and then what did you do? Did you go to college?
Yeah, I actually had a full ride scholarship to go to college. And I went for half a semester, and I realized this is a load of garbage. Once they they had me signed up for a class to teach me how to use the school, how to even attend. I'm like, if I can't figure this out, then I shouldn't be here. And then that was the day I walked out. And I decided to learn a skill or a trade. So I became a residential electrician. And then that whole time, you know, parents, me, we're still doing the homesteading thing, doing the farming thing. While I was an electrician, I was not living at the homestead at the time. Sure. I had my own apartment and stuff like that, doing the commute that way. And then after a while, being an electrician, we decided to move down to Texas to what we thought was going to be a potential prospect there. The Texas thing didn't end up working out. But while we were in Texas, we got a lot of education part done. Like, for example, while I was there, I got my PDC squared away. I got that through the School of Permaculture in Dallas, Texas.
So for those that don't know, do you want to explain what a PDC is?
Oh, right. Yeah. PDC is a permaculture design certificate. And then you get your PDC by taking a PDC, which is a permaculture design course. So usually once you go through your PDC, you get a PDC. But that's really what it is. And in my case, it was a 14-week course taught by Nicholas Bertner at the School of Permaculture.
Dallas. I've met him several times. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. And then he was also teaching with our friend Eric Sider, who he owns the business Planting Pioneers, and if he has a YouTube channel as well. He does our tip of the day now our podcast, the Pimpcast. But those two were my instructors, and Eric Sider was actually one of the few people in the world that Jeff Lawton trusted, because he had gone over there and worked with them for, I think, quite a few years, I think, and went with them to China and Vietnam and Jordan and all that stuff. So after I took my PDC, became closer friends with Eric, I went out to New Mexico and did Earthship internship. Came back and then went out to Australia to do the apprenticeship with Jeff Lawton via Eric Sider. So that's where that whole connection came in really, really handy as far as like your PDC picking and stuff like that. So he sends me out to Australia and I work with Jeff Lawton for about 6 months and then come back to Texas. And then I go to the Earthship apprenticeship, which is slightly different than the internship. They're giving you they're actually trying to teach you how to build an Earthship. Whereas the internship is like, all right, we'll see if any of these college kids actually want to do something like pound tires.
Like hard labor.
Right. Yeah. Most of them were just doing it to knock off their, what was it like their volunteer credit that they had to do for the year?
Wow. So you have an extensive background and training. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I appreciate it, man. And then during that whole, education process, I've held down a few different jobs. So it wasn't like I just stuck with, only doing homesteading or farming the whole time. Like for example, I was a residential electrician at one point. I was a donut baker at one point. I was a sleep technician at one point. That was by far the worst job I've ever had. Let me stay up all night and watch other people sleep.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And then nobody's happy about the fact that they're there or the fact that I've hooked up wires and told them to sleep throughout the night. Yeah. Then I've also, various other jobs. I for sure found out what I didn't want to do for the rest of my life. And I think that is where the beginning of choosing this lifestyle started.
That's great. I mean, that's kind of powerful too, being the fact that you've had these other experiences with trades and just various jobs, and then you still chose an agricultural agrarian type lifestyle. That's pretty interesting. It's not like you've always done that. That's all you've ever known. So that makes it even more of a powerful decision, since you've tasted other trades and different things like that and still chose to do it. That's pretty interesting.
like the Amish Rumspringer. I went out in the world, discovered I didn't like it, and came right back.
So, okay. So then you were in Texas. You got all your certifications. You did these internships with literally the most cutting edge. I mean, Jeff Lawton is, he's the modern day father, the living father of permaculture. And you got to, what was it like being in Australia for 6 months?
Man, all right. So I don't know what everybody's feelings towards snakes are, but that will change the day you get to Australia. Every day since the day I landed and the day I left, I was killing at least an Eastern common brown snake, which if you get bit by it, you just die. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but you don't have guns in Australia. Yeah. You got to get up close and personal with it. Like some of these brown snakes were longer than the shovel I was using to kill them. But I had to kill them because I had to get to the other side of them just to go to the bathroom. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's real life National Geographic down there.
Wow. So so you learned more skills than that.
Yeah. That's,
okay, so now you get certified. You're in Texas. Then what happens?
Get certified, come back to Texas. We're making the thing work in Texas. We're not particularly happy about the location we were at that point in time. We were just kind of like, we're just kind of making it work. And then one day I got arrested in small town DeKalb, Texas for having a dirty license plate. By dirty, I mean it had gravel dust on it.
You're on a dirt road.
Everybody is. If you got to town, you had to come through a dirt road to get there. And then I got arrested for it. They took me straight to the judge and was like, was all this worth it? And I'm like, this is absolutely ridiculous. And then dad, he was working like 2 hours away out in Sherman at the time, Sherman, Texas. Yeah. And he's like, you know, we don't have to stay. And then me and mom right there, we decided, yeah, you're right. We don't have to stay.
Wow.
And then about 3 months later, they found this place up here in North Carolina and we moved. 3 months later.
So how many acres are y'all on there in North Carolina?
I think it's technically, it's listed as 12, but everything is on a slope. And when they take those measurements, it's on a two-dimensional plane. So what it actually is, I don't know. We haven't figured up the hypotenuse yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But it's somewhere about 12, and then we're looking to acquire hopefully the land next door to us, which will definitely expand the farm for sure.
Man, that is great. And I'm very jealous because y'all are in the mountains and you're in a technical like rainforest, correct? So like you get rain frequently.
It just rained today. It rained yesterday. I think it rained 3 days before that. And it's always gentle. Like, okay, in Texas, you know, you get those walls of rain.
Very familiar. Casey.
I'm still waiting for it to rain hard here.
Wow. Gentle rain every other day.
That gentle, nourishing rain.
That sounds like paradise when you're trying to grow food. So, okay. So you make this transition. Now you're in North Carolina. So then what happens next?
Well, that's whenever, I think we were only like 50 episodes in on our YouTube channel whenever we'd made the switch to North Carolina. So we started taking, I think we didn't even get monetized on YouTube till after we moved to North Carolina.
Neat. How long have you been in North Carolina? About 4 years?
Almost 4 years. Yeah. This November will be 4 years, I think, or gotcha. October, somewhere around there.
Yeah. And we were neighbors the whole time and didn't even know each other.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. Oh, man. How long have you guys had your YouTube up?
We've had our YouTube 6 years.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So there was definitely overlap. Man, too bad we didn't explore more on the YouTube page.
Yeah. That's funny. Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. And once we got to North Carolina, we started taking the YouTube thing a little bit more seriously. Started promoting and teaching and hosting at events. And it's just kind of built up from there. Just recently, well, actually not even recently, a year ago, we started the Pimpcast. You just realize, I think for us, we realized what some of the holes were in some of the platforms we were on. And then we started expanding outward from that and adjusting and trying to fix the holes that were already existing in some of these platforms. Like YouTube. I mean, we can talk about stuff on, you know, these podcasts that we can't even mention on YouTube, or we get put in the hole that we're in right now. And you guys are definitely in it.
Yeah, we're very familiar. And thanks to your dad was the one that called me and encouraged us to start a podcast. And we had been talking about it for well over a year. We had set up the distributions. We originally went with Podbean, and we just kind of dropped the ball. And because my fear and concern was like, if we do one more thing, if we spread ourselves too thin, we'll do nothing well, you know. And we were still trying to finish up the courses and figure out how we were going to introduce those. And we just had too many irons in the fire. And then we started, and then we found this USDA butcher that can actually turn stuff around quickly. And then we started selling our beef and pork, and it's just been, and that's exploded. That's been just an awesome blessing. And we jumped in head first with the Fearless Podcast, and really appreciate your dad. Your dad can always, when the Fearless Podcast explodes, I can always credit your dad for the formation of the Fearless Podcast.
I'm sure he appreciates it. It's awesome. But as far as the podcast goes, we thought about it for a year too before we did it. We thought about it for a year, put out one episode, didn't do it again, and then just like about a year later revisited the idea. So I think the moral of the story is, y'all, if you have an idea for a podcast, just go ahead and start. Don't deliberate and just get on it.
Exactly. You'd be a year ahead, right? And be a year further down the road. So you're in North Carolina, you're setting up the farm, you're planting your food forest now. So you've had all these other different types of occupations on and off farm. Why? Okay. And you're married now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
So why did you decide that you wanted to stay on the farm and live off the farm, and how did you all go about monetizing that to make that possible?
Well, so full transparency, my wife is a NICU nurse, so she does bring in income. Cool. She doesn't work for the farm or the homesteader. I mean, she does do work for sure. But she also, whenever we started dating, she was already in nursing school to become a NICU nurse and all that stuff. She knew from the beginning she wanted to be a NICU nurse. So there's money coming in that way. The main mode of making money that I have is not actually through YouTube or the Permaculture Pimpcast or anything like that. It's actually doing in-person consultations. So I travel to your farm or to your homestead, and using the experience that I have and all the mistakes that we've made, I can then guide you in what you should do next and what order of events you should do on your farm. Usually solve any problems that you may have. I can't really think of any consultations I've done where we haven't been able to figure out the solution. So that's what I mainly do for an income. And then everything else is just like supplemental and stuff like that. The main reason we came back though, it just seems the wisest decision. Like every other culture in the world sticks together, like the family stick together and pull their resources. It seems like a weird American idea of like leaving the house. I mean, I did leave my parents' house immediately, and then I came back because this made the most sense. I mean, now that my wife and I are about to have a child, we have one coming up at the end of October. We're looking to expand, you know, and build our own home and stuff like that. But
that's great. And it's neat because you came back home and you're not just living in your mom and dad's basement, you know, living off of their charity, like most of these Gen Zers now, you know, they're just playing video games in their mom's basement or whatever. But so that's neat. So you're, you generate income through permaculture design consultations on site or virtual. You do virtual.
I don't do the virtual aspect. My friend Eric Sider, he's the one that does the virtual side of it. For me, I don't feel like I can give you honestly good information without having seen the landscape. Because I usually do look at the property virtually before I ever go visit it. And I try to come up with a preliminary assessment before I even get there. And about 70% of that is incorrect or wrong. Whenever I look at it. Now, Eric Sider is a freaking genius when it comes to technology. He's able to give you very accurate information virtually. He is an awesome guy. I just don't have that ability, and I don't have the confidence in that yet to do it virtually. But the in-person ones. Oh, go ahead.
So if you offer that service, why don't we just break briefly and you can tell everybody how to get a hold of you? We have lots of homesteaders that watch and listen to the podcast and watch your channel. So why don't you give everybody your contact information? So if they are looking for a consultation, they can reach out to you and get something scheduled.
Awesome. I appreciate that, man. If you just email me at permapasturesfarm@gmail.com. And then put in the subject consultation, just email me that way. And that's the best way to get a hold of me. You can also message us through Instagram at Permapastures Farm. But definitely email is the best way to get a hold, best direct way to get a hold of me. And that's permapasturesfarm@gmail.com. I appreciate that, man.
Awesome. Yeah, you got it. I mean, so the one thing that we did, one of the reasons why we don't have as much traction is we're not a how-to channel. Like, we watch all the how-to channels, and we watch a channel just like your. I mean, your Permapasture Farm channel is like my wheelhouse when it comes to, like, I'm a fruit tree guy, I'm a grafting guy, I'm a mulching guy. Like, these are all the things that I experiment with more effectively every year, but there's been an enormous amount of trial and error and much more error and a lot of trial. And the success is now so we used to call, what did we used to call our homestead? We used to call it, Everything Dies Homestead or something like that. I forget, we used to have this running joke, you know, and it took us, 4 or 5 years of just, Death Acres. That's what we call it. Death
Acres. That's everybody's farm at first.
we called the homestead Death Acres. And for the first 4 or 5 years, you know, as we were, our soil, we had no soil. We had gravel and clay. The back 40 was like sandy loam, but there's tons of pine back there. And we built our soil. We had all different, even with chickens, man, talk about the easiest thing in the world to raise. We had different battles with Kurza, we think, you know, and then we had battles with, I think it was chemtrails, where, you know, we would free range for quite a while until we learned more about mountain lions and coyotes. Yeah. And we wanted to stop feeding the wildlife, you know. So now we've come up with these bulletproof hoop houses that we've very large, long hoop houses. But you know, and it's so funny that's what's hilarious about being in this space and being on social media, because everybody's like, oh, you should just free range your chickens, you know, and you could free range them and feed them table scraps. And if you have a livestock guardian dog, I mean, that's all you need. And I'm like, well, we have a livestock guardian dog, and we did free range them. And, you know, when you go from 100 chickens to 50 chickens to 25 chickens to 10 chickens, eventually you're like, okay, we need to try, fail, and adjust, you know? So,
right. And like another point with those chickens, if like, all right, so I have 10 fingers right here. If each one of those fingers is like a benefit of a chicken, by free ranging them, I'm cutting off like three or four of those fingers, just because I can't directly direct their efforts. I'm letting them do whatever they want. And if I let them do whatever they want, they're just going to look for the best food possible for themselves. Meanwhile, I need them to scratch up this anthill.
And they're going to lay their eggs where you absolutely can't find them.
Never in the nesting box.
So, okay. So now you're on the farm, you're doing permaculture design. So, and you've chosen one, you've chosen a related field that relates to homesteading and permaculture and your passion. And now I think your dad and your mom, they both have PDCs as well, right? I know your dad does. Your mom has a PDC, right?
Yeah, everybody in the house does, except for my wife. And she will be, as soon as she's done with this birthing aspect, uh-huh, she'll be getting in with her permaculture education as well.
That is cool. So what do you guys do? You guys do a lot of traveling as well, as far as like different homesteading and type trade show type events and stuff like that.
Well, we're not really trade shows, but we do travel to teach a lot of the time. Like Dad, I think at the end of October is going to be heading over to Kentucky Sustainable Living, their festival over in Kentucky. Okay. Last year we went out to Missouri. My parents went out to Florida earlier this year. And then there's a bunch of like semi-local homestead events and festivals that we do around here. And then as far as the consultation aspect, at the end of this month, I'll be going out to Arizona to do consultations.
Okay.
Yeah. So as far as like, if a client is willing to pay for the flight, I'll come out and do the consultation. So the travel isn't too limited. It's about to be a little limited with a baby on the way, but
yeah.
Yeah, we're traveling all over the world, or not all over the world, all over the states, trying to teach people as much as they want to learn about permaculture. The people who actually want to learn, we are here to help you.
So now, you know, we hear Joel Salatin frequently in the past year or so. He's talking about this homesteading tsunami. What have you seen on your end as a consultant? Are you seeing that pick up, and are you seeing the interest grow? What have you noticed as far as this interest in homesteading?
There seems to be a huge interest among the IT and tech people. I think that's where the biggest transition has occurred. With the blue collar construction aspect people, I don't know that there's really been much of a change. I think they still think that if crap hits the fan, that they're going to go out and hunt deer. I think that's what they think is going to happen. Whereas the IT people realize that, I don't know anything. I need to figure out something. Let me start figuring out how to grow food, because hunting just seems so, you know, distant. So let me figure out how to, you know, hunt on my own property, basically. And
you know what the IT people know as well? They know about the panopticon. They know about the infrastructure and what's there. And they know about the track, trace, stack them, pack them, track them. And so that's why I think they have a greater motivation, and they have the finances to fund it. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. But you would think like the group of people that are closest to farming and homesteading, this like right next door, you would think that they would kind of pick up on the times, but it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be largely IT people that are coming into this space, which
that's interesting.
More the merrier. I'm perfectly fine with that. If they wanted to show me some tips on editing and the sound engineering, I'll train them.
Right. That's right. I can barter a little bit on our circles of knowledge. Yeah, that's a great idea. I would love for somebody to give me some technology tips, because fourth time's the charm trying to record this podcast, but at least we're up and running now. We got everybody your email contact. Now, where can they find you on social media?
On social media, we are on Instagram, Permapastures Farm, and that is the extent of the social media we have. We don't have a TikTok, we don't have a Snapchat or anything. We obviously have the YouTube channel, and you can find the PimpCast on, should be every podcast server, unless they wiped us out or scrubbed us off of something. But you should be able to find the Permaculture PimpCast wherever you listen to podcasts.
I know you can find it on the Fountain app, and I love the Fountain app. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't used the Fountain app as a podcatcher, it is great, and it's set up very well, and it's on podcasting 2.0, so it's on a different backbone infrastructure. It should be relatively relatively impervious to the technocrats and their chicanery. So I like listening there. You get paid to listen there. You get your satoshis. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
One thing, that's another thing that I think is really cool is that instead of like, I think we would have more open-minded discussions on podcasts if people weren't worried about their advertisers. If people were being live streamed satoshis as people were listening, if it was good content, I think, you know, people would speak more freely. I don't think they'd be worried about what their advertisers are going to say.
I think you're exactly right. And, you know, and that's why we wanted to dive into this space and see if, you know, and it's just like everything. It's not going to happen overnight, and it's going to take hard work, commitment, dedication. I love what you and your family's doing and your mom and dad, and it's very encouraging. I also love all the Christian components of it, because in this homestead space, you know, there are lots of Christians, right, that are much like our politicians, right? If it's a good veneer to attract, it's a different type of marketing. It's, you know what I mean?
Listener base, yeah.
Yeah, it's part of their marketing. They're a Christian in name, so that way they can pull in Christians to market to. But then, like, I'm sending send us good vibes, you know, like, you know, and I'm just like, wow, well, you know, that's not really a Christian thing to, you know, send people good vibes and well wishes. You know, Christians pray for one another. We bear one another's burdens. That's what we do. And I'm not picking on anybody, but I mean, you guys know a little bit more than me that a lot of people in this space are a social media construct. They're an amalgamation. Their filters, their photo ops, their photo filters, and everything's taken at the right angle. I'm all for, if you can monetize your homestead, right, and you have the appropriate revenue where, you can have a filmer and an editor and all that cool stuff, I think that's great. But there's a large cross section in this genre that are complete construct. They're completely artificial fabrication. And did you want to speak to any of that
I can go in on that one. Yeah, these people, there's a lot of, the majority of the homesteaders you see on YouTube, the majority of the preppers you see on YouTube are complete fakes and frauds. That's just it. Like, a lot of these people started a YouTube channel and then became a homesteader. Not necessarily like all on YouTube, but they found a market, and then they started recording it and stuff like that. And I have no problem with that part at all. It's when you start misleading people, or you start fear mongering, or you start trying to sell fear constantly. I won't go down that route, but yeah, there are a lot of YouTube channels. Podcast,
bro. You can let it rip.
Okay. Yeah. There's plenty of YouTubers that we know, that we have met personally, have absolutely no tactical experience, but have videos saying buy these 10 items or we're all going to die, or buy this or we're going to die, or here's what you need to do to defend your homestead. Like, dude, you don't know how to defend your homestead. The fact that you purchased that house shows me you don't know how to defend your homestead.
Right. Yeah.
There's just obvious, but because they're on YouTube, they have a sense of authority. People automatically listen to them because they're on YouTube. That, I think, is the most irritating aspect of it. I mean, like there's plenty of channels out there that are like, have scantily clad women with their I'll say only pimps link down below. And that's well and good. I guess do whatever you want over on that side, but they're not causing any, I don't think, they're not misleading anybody and thinking, like, they're not telling everybody like, hey, this is how you plant an instant garden or something like that. They don't claim to have the information. Some of the other ones are claiming to have the answers, claiming to know the information, and it is flat wrong. It is absolutely wrong. And that's what's infuriating.
And that, what we've always wanted to do is like, look, we're a plain Jane, ordinary family. Our kids on a whim when they were little, 6 years ago, my son was like 11 or 12. They bought a $20 goo kit. It was called a goo kit. The camera was called a goo kit. Okay. I have no idea what a goo kit is. It was like a GoPro knockoff. And that's okay. How they started the channel with this $20 camera. And Matt taught himself how to edit. I think originally he was using Wondershare. He was using some free software package. And that's how the whole thing started. And then when we started planning stuff, I mean, you can go right back to our original videos before we had any fruit trees, before the land was even cleared. And we just said, hey, we're just plodding along. We're just trying this thing. And we always said, this isn't a how-to channel, man. All we want to do is encourage people to try. Look, mm-hmm. We don't have all the answers and we're trying to figure it out too, but just do something. When I had my construction company, I would always say, do something, even if it ain't right, just do something, man. Like, I don't even care. Like, somebody do something, you know? And that's kind of been our philosophy. Like, you know, we're just going to do this thing and we're going to be transparent and honest about it and tell people what we found that works and that works for us and tell people what hasn't worked for us. And that doesn't mean it won't work for them. But, and we've done a lot of the different popular things. You know, there's always these different trends and the popular things that go around. Mm-hmm. And, now we've switched to a carnivore diet and we have had an enormous amount of success with that. And that's really what led us to, that's actually how we ended up, interestingly enough, simultaneously, that's when we found our USDA butcher and we had several cows that had to be processed. So I don't know if it was Matt's idea or my wife's idea. She's like, let's throw some of these up on the website and see if we can sell them. And we sold out. And now I think we're sold out again this month, which is really neat. It's pretty exciting. And the quality, this butcher is excellent and they vacuum pack everything. It's done really well. And our customers are really happy. So now what's happened with us is we went from death acres to we're kind of growing stuff acres and I'm having much more success with the fruit trees and different things, but there was still no type of monetization. It certainly wasn't $300 a month from YouTube ad revenue, yeah. You know, that was going to make it happen. But the boys, they've continued to, we did have three successful months on YouTube, three successful months out of 6 years. Okay. Oh,
yeah.
And the boys took all of that revenue. They bought a portable sawmill. They just bought a F-250 to haul our cows around in. So they bought all this stuff. We've converted this studio storage area for the website. And, their website has done very well for them. And we really love our subscribers and we're looking to grow that same type of subscribership through the podcast. It's so interesting because I consume so many podcasts, right? And I never thought of it being viable for us. And then after we started doing it, I'm like, wait a minute, relatively speaking, you know, that's what I do during the day when I'm not either with a client or typing something up. Like because I drive a lot, you know, going from appointment to appointment and here, there, and everywhere. And that's what I do. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. This makes total sense because I am just a voracious consumer of this type of medium, you know, and I listen to a lot of sermons on sermon audio. And so I'm like, yeah, an audio platform just makes so much sense. So, I really appreciate when you see your dad, you give your dad a hug for me.
Okay. And, I don't know, man. I think I was out there broad forking right before I came in.
That's even better. Then I really want you to give him a really bear hug. Make sure you get the armpits on.
Yeah, I'll do that for sure.
That's great. That's great. Hey, William, man, I appreciate having you on. You all look, if you consume podcasts, you definitely have to check out the Permaculture Pimpcast wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, y'all, don't get freaked out. It's PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. And you are getting information from experts, and it's humorous, it's Christian-based, it's edifying, it's uplifting, you know, and it's real. That's been our biggest thing. And that's why I found such an affinity to y'all. Like, I just want to be real. And that means we can talk about real things. We can talk about the good news and the bad news, and we can recognize reality. We don't have to be all like Pollyanna. Yeah. The other thing we don't have to do is talk like an effeminate, like, oh, hey, piggy. Oh, good piggy. And I'm like, yo, dude, you know, like just Olympus, practice
blue haired Marchy.
Just practice dropping your voice. It's like the testosterone. It's so invigorating, you know, to just practice that. But yeah, you know, we appreciate your content. And if y'all are looking at growing fruit trees, composting, if you want to know about any type of intentional planting, and definitely with composting, and I think y'all even got some stuff on grafting and different things like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we do. And also grazing systems and stuff. Yeah.
And grazing systems. So what kind of animals do you have?
Right now we are down to sheep and chickens. But usually, I mean, not too long ago, we had a bull out here. We were going to do a breeding program with some neighbors, but that didn't work out. But right now we do sheep and chickens, and usually we have pigs in stock. But we just processed the last of the pigs not too long ago. So we'll be getting pigs here before too long. And then also, if we can expand, if potentially this deal goes through with the next door property, if we can expand the farm, then we might switch over to doing some cattle as well.
Cows. Okay. What kind of breed of cows are you thinking about?
Probably Dexter or Highland or something like that. Something that does well in steep terrain. I think Angus is just going to die left and right out here.
Yeah. Angus are ephemeral. You know, we have the Longhorn, and then since we went carnivore, as you know, Longhorn is very lean, and with carnivore, it's all about upping your fat content. So what we did is we swapped out our Longhorn bull, Johnny Cash. We swapped him out for a low-line Hereford. So we wanted to add some marbleization back in there to the herd. So we have a great network of community ranchers and ropers. You know, our one really good friend, he's a roper. So he'll buy all these calves, and he grows them out on really good quality hay. And then once they get so big, he can't use them anymore, you know, because he can't use them to practice trips. So he sells them to us. So we have a nice little network. And we're going with a Hereford Longhorn cross to bring in the hardiness of the Longhorn and then the marbleization of the Hereford. And we're just having an enormous amount of success on this carnivore journey. So that's going to be part of our channel podcast when we're talking about the whole carnivore thing.
I got a question as far as that goes. Sure. How long did it take you guys to get the digestion aspects situated? Because that was a nightmare for me.
It took us about 2 weeks. And right now, everybody is doing really well. So are you doing keto or carnivore, or what are you doing, Wayne?
Right now I'm back on keto. I was doing carnivore for maybe about 2 months, not too long ago, but I switched over to to keto. And whenever I say keto, like we grow a whole bunch of food, and it seems ridiculous for me to not like partake in some of the fruits and vegetables that occasionally, not enough fruits to knock me out of keto or anything like that.
Yeah. And to be really honest, you know, I have a ton of figs. I have about 140 or 50 varieties and about 20 varieties of mulberries. And then we have Asian pears. So I still eat the fruit on a kid. Now I don't gorge on the fruit, but I still, when I get those super ripe crackled figs and everything, man, it is just but predominantly I'm eating a pound or two of usually beef, Sometimes some bacon, and then now we're interjecting butter back into the diet. But personally, I had no gut changes. You know, I had no digestion issues whatsoever. Everything with me stayed because even though I was eating everything else, I ate a lot of meat usually every day. Yeah. Everybody else, there was a transition, and really all it was is like a slowing process. So if you went from going like once a day, now you're going like once every 4 days or so. But
yeah, it was freaky at first, man. I know they give you warnings, but yeah.
And then, you know, we made sure that we stay up on our electrolytes and all that kind of cool stuff. But
that part I've noticed is very important. The electrolytes, or else it doesn't seem to work unless you have the electrolyte aspect, or it's just really like miserable without the electrolytes.
Yeah. It can just, you feel really run down and worn out. So, but yeah, we're loving it so far, you know, and it's just like everything else we've done. We try it. If it works, we do more of it. And if it doesn't work, we adjust it. But, right now we're super digging it. And from a preparedness standpoint, you know, we got to keep these freezers running, but, it makes the rest of our prepping and food preparation very simplistic and easy to plan,
especially if you just cook like a bunch of meat at the beginning of the week and then just like reheat it and then eat it as you go throughout the rest of the week. It's probably the most efficient form of eating.
It really is. And then what we were able to do is, since we're sourcing and processing all of our own meat on the hamburger, we just asked the butcher, give us the max fat. So I think it's a 60-40 split on the hamburger. And man, it is absolutely the most killer, ridiculously good hamburger. Like freshly grilled is like incredible. So awesome. Yeah, we're liking it, and we're having success on it. And then we're getting lots of different testimonials from different subscribers. So it's pretty cool. We're trying to track their journey. You know? And, well, man, it has been great. I really appreciate you being on. Everybody go check out Permapasture Farms on YouTube, Instagram, and on your favorite podcatcher. Check out the Permaculture Pimpcast. And, any parting words, William, any words of that to inspire or to just get people to think about something?
I mean, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on here. This is always weird being the one interviewed, because usually it's Dad the one that's being interviewed. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on here. And if you're just getting into homesteading, like, don't let fear be the deciding factor for anything with the homesteading aspect, because that is, in my experience, that has been the number one factor to cause issues on your homestead. Don't panic buy any animals. Don't do anything like that. If you avoid those mistakes, usually you're going to be fine. Just start off small and start off slow. Whatever garden you're going to start off with, cut that in half and then go from there. But yeah,
there you go. You just got all the gold nuggets. William is wise beyond his years, as you can tell. So, I mean, he just gave you some serious stuff to think about. And what he just told you not to do is everything that we did. So there you go. And I can attest to it that it is the truth. And with that, that's going to wrap up episode 5. Hey, y'all, this is a value for value proposition. If you do love the information that we are putting out, please go to thetexasboys.com. Check out our unvaccinated honey, coffees, teas, maybe some of our merch if you want some t-shirts. Also, right now, y'all, please check out the information below and give Stacy a call over there at Miles Franklin. The spread on silver is incredibly low. The current spot value is low. Take advantage of the manipulation on gold and silver. If you're looking for hard assets, please give Stacy a call. Let them know the Texas Boy sent you. We love y'all, and we will catch you on the next one.